Osiris.
Hey, this is Tom Marshall. I want to wish a happy birthday to some friends. 5 years ago, two pals, RJB and Brad Tenbrook, decided to review a 1995 Fish show from Dayton, Ohio. Thus, the first of almost 150 Helping Friendly podcast episodes was born. HF Pod is the cornerstone of Osiris, and without it, neither Under the Scales nor Osiris would exist. So happy birthday and congratulations to founders RJB and Brad Tenbrook, and also to the other HF Pod family members, Jonathan Hart and Matt Dwyer. Well done, guys.
Hey everybody, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 138. I'm here with Jonathan and Matt. What's up, guys?
Hey guys.
Hey.
We are doing a quick conversation before we jump into a conversation with Dawn, who is the host and founder of Female Centrics, the podcast. We'll talk about that a little bit as we dive into the episode. But first, just wanted to say hi. What's going on, guys? What's been happening in the world of fish and music? Anything?
Not much for me. It's been pretty quiet around here. You had anything new come up recently, RJ?
Not much. Just, you know, got to talk to the guy from Fish for a while last week, which was pretty cool. But besides that, it's been pretty quiet, you know, just a casual 90-minute conversation with Trey. But aside from that, you know, nothing else.
Way to undersell it, dude.
Well, if people haven't heard, there's an episode of Under the Scales, the podcast hosted by Tom Marshall, with Trey talking about the 20th anniversary of Story of the Ghost, along with Tom and with me. So I think it turned out pretty well, guys. There's tons of cool stories that Trey tells. I mean, it was a really pretty wonderful experience for me. But you guys were on the listening side. Did you enjoy listening back to it?
I really dug it. Trey and Tom, of course, whenever they get talking, there's the rapport there is groovy. And Trey, he just has a lot to say. He's always got like one more thing about this topic before the next. And,
yeah,
you know, and there's a lot of pretty cool one more things. And just hearing the basic origin behind, although unrelated to Story of the Ghost, but behind I Am Hydrogen was a...
yeah.
As a big fan of that song, as I may be, that was pretty great. It's also really disheartening to hear that Trey can't pronounce Roger.
I thought it was really funny that both times that Trey's been on Under the Scales, Tom is like very, very prepared with a list of questions and he's like trying to work down it. And he's like, okay, Trey, I want to be, you know, sensitive to your time and get through this. And Trey's like, yeah, that's cool. Except I have this other thing that I want to talk about too. Yeah. I mean, in a good way that he's so game to talk about it. And just so many amazing stories came out of that stuff that I wouldn't even have thought to ask about from that period that he just brought up and went into in amazing detail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also there's the little like looking ahead nugget that Trey is currently writing yet another, you know, multi-part composition type piece. That's cool.
Yeah.
And I look forward to the moment when we hear that.
Definitely.
Yeah. It was like, we were just kind of chatting with him, you know. It wasn't like, probably for him, not like an interview, you know, where you're on the phone with a journalist or whatever. He was just kind of chatting with Tom and this other guy. So he was being very open and honest about a lot of stuff. It was cool. And that toward the end, as you guys heard, talked a lot about Paige's rig and how much he's, you know, admires the way Paige is playing, and talked about Fishman being the greatest drummer in the world, and talked about Mike being awesome. And so he seems to be pretty happy with this band of his.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. It's a good thing. So yeah, if people haven't heard, go to underthescales.com, or you can find Under the Scales on iTunes and everywhere else. But it was really fun. Great, great thrill and great reception so far. This is, by the time this comes out, I guess the episode will have been out for 2 days, but we're recording this the day it came out, and a lot of really just appreciative people. And I will say that, you know, once we've finished recording it, the first thing I said to Tom was like, I just can't wait for people to hear this. Because, you know, it was cool to interview Trey, and it was fun and all that, but everything we do on this podcast and through Osiris and everything else is for the community, you know? So I was really excited for people to be able to listen to that.
Didn't you start this podcast with the hope that you would get to interview Trey one day? So now you can quit, right?
Yeah, that was it. It was like, I set a 10-year time limit. I just wanted to be realistic. It's been 5 years, so, you know, we're 5 years ahead. That's pretty good. So for the next 5 years of the podcast, we're just going to, I don't know. I think it's just going to be radio silence.
It's easy street.
Just coast on this.
Yeah. Riding those fumes, man.
Yeah, exactly. What else is going on in fish news, guys?
Baker's Dozen
box.
Exactly. So and records.
We should link to that. Tell people what the box, the options are for boxes. Two boxes, right? Or is there only one box?
Well, there's one big box that has like 30,000 CDs with all 13 shows. Mm-hmm. And it's got some miniature posters and some other stuff in a really nice package, which reminds me a lot of some of the like the Grateful Dead deluxe boxes like they did for Europe 72 or what have you. Mm-hmm. It's all the material's been remixed and mastered by somebody. What's his name? Do you remember, Matt? It's
Elliot Shiner.
Thank you. You told me this. He did the MSG 95 set,
right?
Which sounds terrific. So that bodes well.
He also, he did the It DVD. I think that was the first thing you worked on with Fish, and then the New Year's 95 box. He's also, he's a legendary mix engineer. He worked on Steely Dan's Gaucho, which is like one of the greatest sounding records ever, according to a lot of people.
It's no Asia.
Yeah, I think maybe he was an engineer on Asia too. A lot of stuff.
Asia's no pretzel logic.
It's no Katie Lied, I'll tell you that.
Matt, as someone who doesn't use physical media, speaking of myself, I was curious to see people talking about all kinds of different theories about this, but also I know that you were posting on Twitter about the, you know, physical media and how that's a big part of people's lives still. I listen to everything online and through the Live Fish app, which I've subscribed to for a long time. And I encourage people to subscribe to it as well. But Matt, what are the advantages, and is it more of a collector thing, or do you think there are significant advantages, sound wise to getting something like this?
Yeah. This is a little bit of a head scratcher, and I've got to think that, because they announced it so far ahead of the release and are taking pre-orders now, that tells me that they're probably trying to make only, you know, the number of boxes that they need to by getting people to, pre-order early before they manufacture. I'm just taking a stab in the dark. I don't know. Maybe they want to let people kind of save up for it, and there's a lot of tour costs and stuff like that. But it's weird to me, though, because, you know, you mentioned physical media, and I'll correct one thing that you said. I'm into physical media, but not digital physical media. As Jonathan is too, we're both vinyl guys. So if I like buying products, I like supporting the artists, that I like. But if I'm going to spend money on an album or a release, it's going to be on vinyl. CDs, I just don't have any use for in my life anymore. The only place I have a CD player is in my car, and I think my car that I've had for 3 years, I don't think I've ever actually put a CD into it. I do digital. I'm not a, you know, vinyl only guy. I've got a huge digital collection. I do a lot of high res stuff in my own collection. I've got like a streaming server in my house, and I'm into it. I do, you know, the whole thing, and I want to be able to pay for that kind of stuff. And I understand that, putting out 13 shows on vinyl would be impractical for a number of reasons. I mean, the number of records it would take, the length of some of the jams is a little bit prohibitive, stuff like that. And it may not be a good idea, but as a collector, it's weird to me because like that box with all the little tchotchkes and the posters and everything like that's right up my alley. And I know a lot of people don't get into those deluxe boxes and they just want the music. I'll spend a little bit of extra coin to get something like that, but not for 36 CDs. And I kind of wish, Go ahead, Jonathan.
No, let's hear your wish, and then I want to pile on a little.
Well, so, like, I mean, if ideally for me, I would have loved to have seen, like, what the Grateful Dead did with their 30 Trips box, where they had a CD version and they had a USB stick version. And so you could get the box and all of the stuff, and you're paying for the music. You know, you're not pirating it. You don't have a guilty conscience about it or anything like that. But you get a USB stick with high-res files on it, instead of, you know, wasting a bunch of plastic and taking a bunch of space on your shelf with CDs that are literally never going to get listened to.
I largely support that. I mean, I have a CD player in my very old truck, and the only CDs I buy are things that I can only get on CD. So really, like, independent artists who just aren't putting out every single thing on vinyl. So I will buy the vinyl release. And so we haven't really specified, for the folks who don't know, there's, in addition to the big box, there is a 13-track sampler. I think it's 13-track sampler that will be on CD and LP.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how many LPs it is.
I think it's six.
Yeah.
Six. So it's a box in itself. Yeah. And will be substantive and will be on my shelf at some point. There's no doubt that I will buy that. But I kind of agree with the notion that it would be cool if there were like a thumb drive version or whatever. But, you know, I think that Grateful Dead have a lot of success with these CD boxes. They set them out. I mean, just compact discs sets that are like three discs, they can release one, sell it out and pre-order in minutes. They just, the last Dave's Picks sold out in like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And maybe they're looking to that model, hoping to see that kind of success. I think that the Phish audience skews younger and a little bit more tech savvy, although great deadheads tend to, many deadheads have been cutting edge for years and stay ahead of the line, but also Phish has seen a lot of piracy. They see a lot of people trading stuff. So if they put out a thumb drive of these shows, the high res audio of these shows, you and I, we all know that we would probably see that link being passed around very soon after release day, and that's. Okay, that's not particularly cool, and it certainly doesn't work well for the band. So I'm not entirely surprised they aren't going there yet.
But it's interesting, but it's also just could be an experiment, right? See what happens. Unique experience, the Baker's Dozen, and sort of see what happens with it. I mean, you do get, of course, like you guys mentioned, Matt, I think you mentioned there's an 86-page book with color photographs, essays with new interviews, setlist journals, a patch, commemorative tickets, 8 mini prints, and a new Jim Pollock screen print. So that's like a lot of really cool shit. So maybe
you're getting some, some for your money.
But the 36 cool CDs stuff. Are like, that's a big, like you said, it's a lot of shelf space, but people should, you know, check it out. It's interesting. So you guys are you going to both get the LP thing?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm in for the LP box. I've got some time to convince myself, because I'm kind of back and forth on the CD box about, like, you know, maybe I just get it anyway. Because that's the thing, is I do want to hear the new mix of all the shows and everything like that. I'm really looking forward to that. So I'm not going to commit to that yet, and I'm going to give myself a little time to think about it.
Well, I don't go ahead, Jonathan.
Well, I'm also kind of hoping that we'll see a later, if they do well enough on this, maybe they'll take pity on us and give us a little like individual show release. If you notice, the sampler doesn't have anything from Jam Night. It does, and there's another night that they omitted. I can't remember which. Jimmy's, I think, is missing from it. And
Matt and I were there, you know.
Well, so, but my point being is that I'm sure that they withheld those. Probably thinking, well, you want them, you got to get the big box. But maybe at some point they'll let those shows out too individually or something. Also, I'm hoping that they see enough success with this project that they're willing to do a video audio boxed set of Big Cypress for the 20th anniversary next year.
That's a good idea.
Well, yeah. And so I was saying earlier, you know, trying to figure out where their heads are at, and maybe they're trying to gauge interest in this, but this, I feel like this might be a test run for something like that. You know, they put out right. the Clifford Ball DVD set, and that kind of bumped right up against the period when DVDs were kind of on their last legs. You know, there's the other festivals, including Cypress and, you know, the Great Went.
Need those two.
Yeah, you know, the Great Went, the Lemon Wheel. People would love to see all of those put out probably, but I think that a lot of the same questions would come up. You know, I mean, are people going to buy a DVD box set? Are they going to buy a Blu-ray box set?
Yes.
Everybody clamors for Big Cypress. And the funny thing to me was, like, you know, everybody's like, Cypress. When's it coming out? But then they were announced something that's kind of analogous to that in this huge CD set. And it's like, why would I want to buy CDs? So I wonder what it is that, you know, people are looking for in a Cypress box set other than for it to just be, you know, the music to just be available. And I don't know.
A full mastered soundboard version release of the thing. I mean, we don't even have a full soundboard of those shows. I mean,
everybody knows that already. Come on.
Has been, you know, yes, it's been remixed, but we've all heard soundboards. You know, we all, like, probably all three of us subscribe to Live Fish. Everybody else has heard what they, if they want to hear it, they've heard it. It may be not as good as the new release will sound, but we've all heard that. Big Cypress, it's been almost 20 years. We haven't heard the whole thing in soundboard straight through. You know you want it. There's video of the whole thing. At least they filmed it, whether they've kept it.
Yeah, they probably forgot to keep it. They forgot to keep it. They forgot to keep it.
Maybe they taped some Murder, She Wrote over it. But yeah, and then the same goes for the Went and Lemon Wheel. We want those two.
It may be surprising to everyone listening. Jonathan and others feel strongly that Big Cypress should be released. This is the first time anyone's ever expressed this opinion.
I know nobody's ever said it out loud.
It's important to be heard, you know? We got to let all opinions be heard. All right, so guys, go ahead. Are you going to say something else about Big Cypress?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we're going to talk about Big Cypress all night, right? No, I mean, so maybe it's an interesting question. When you guys hear this, tweet at us. Maybe we'll get it going on. Like, tell us, what is your ideal Big Cypress box set look like? What kind of media do you want? What do you want included? How much are you willing to spend? Or are you just going to pirate the thing and you just want it to be out there?
I think they should. I'm going to vote for the model that the Grateful Dead used for the Vanita 72 show. Remaster
you're
the
supposed
video
to tweet
to
at
best
us,
ability.
Dude.
No, I have verbal communication capacity here. remaster the video to the best of the ability. Remaster the audio. Put it out in a Blu-ray set. Put it out in a CD-only set. Put it out on vinyl. Inject it into my veins. And thank you. Please. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to get into this conversation with Dawn from Female Centrics, but let's first just say there's Fall Tour also coming. I mentioned it briefly in an intro a few weeks back and said that I think it was the first time that there's nothing but multi-night runs in a tour. I still don't know if that's true, but I think it feels true. So that's kind of cool, right? Do you guys think that's cool that they're playing multiple nights everywhere?
I thought it was just three nights at Hampton. Is there other shows?
Yeah. I think there are a couple others. There's a Halloween show somewhere and there's some other stuff. No, they're going, you know where they're going.
They're going all over the place except for that one place that not you guys, but I'm talking to you out there that you want them to go.
Yeah.
Probably missing your city. But they are playing a bunch of really cool stuff like Chicago, and they're not really doing a lot of Northeast.
No, they're going Albany, Hampton, Nashville, Chicago, and Vegas, all multi-night, at least two nights in each of those places, which is cool. I think we're all going to hopefully hang out in Hampton, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So guys, you guys have, I think, listened a little bit to Female Centric since they launched, 2 months ago or so. They're part of the Osiris Network. The first sort of female centered Fish discussion that we have. I think it's what they're doing is really cool. And I had a really good conversation with Dawn. Did you guys, have listened to the podcast? Any thoughts to throw out there before we start the interview and let people hear from Don?
I really love the show. I think I've said it on Twitter or something, but it is the first place I've heard the word Spange in a long time. But no, I think she's put together a really cool show. It's very entertaining, and they bring a good perspective, and not just female or whatever. It's just they're good, knowledgeable heads who dig the music and have something to say. So it's a lot of fun to listen to. And I'm sorry I missed the interview.
Yeah, likewise. I know, RJ, you and I were talking last summer during the Baker's Dozen about, this sort of surge in female interest in the community, the Fish Chicks Facebook group getting going. And, my wife and a lot of, women that I know in the fish scene who are not necessarily engaged in the way that we are, suddenly kind of coming together and that it was the perfect time for something like that. So I'm so happy that Dawn got that going when she did, because I think it's a valuable resource and she's seen a lot of success with it already.
Yeah, definitely. And she talks a little bit in the interview about, how it started and how it came to be. But you can hear more of that in a minute. I guess the only things I would say are, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. And I don't know. Is there anything else?
Talk to us on Twitter at HF Pod about the Big Cypress release format of your choice.
Yes.
Jonathan and Matt are going to make them in their basements. And I guess thanks everyone for listening. I think that's it. We should get into the interview. So thanks, guys. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, keep on rocking. Who's that lady? Who's that lady? Beautiful lady, lady. Who's that lady? Lovely lady. All right. Hey everybody, I'm here with Dawn Jenkins. Hi Dawn.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Dawn has become a friend recently because she just launched the first and only fish focused podcast that's run and run by females, I guess is the way I would put it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And it's, I want to talk to you more about it. It's interesting because we've had conversations and heard feedback from people for several years, our podcast and others, it's a bunch of dudes, it's a bunch of white dudes with beards. I don't have a beard, but most of them do. And I think that's, there's like the spectrum of thinking about that from like, yeah, that's the fan base, to like the other end of the spectrum is like, well, there's all kinds of different fans and we should bring in the perspectives. And so I don't know, I'm really grateful that you started this project, because I think it brings in a completely different perspective that we've been kind of missing for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and when it was first brought to my attention by Tom and both of you hopped on it, it was almost like, when it was brought up, it was almost, and I said, yeah, I'll do it. It was, I think, within less than a day that both of you guys were on the email and really supportive. So I was like, all right, I think that we're onto something here. So, yeah, your support has been huge with this,
Awesome. I appreciate you saying that. And we'll talk more about the podcast, because you have learned quickly about the pros and cons and the labor of love that it is. So we'll talk about that.
But, yes, definitely.
And I guess we should say before we get too far that Dawn's podcast is Female Centrics with a PH. And, as is HF Pod, she's part of the Osiris Network, which is how we all know each other here. But wanted to kind of talk with you, Dawn, both about the podcast, but also about your fish journey, because I think on your podcast, you interview a lot of great, great people, mostly women who are, I love hearing these. It's a different, completely different style from what we do here, but it's also like you cover similar ground, so it's interesting. Yes. To hear different people's perspectives. But but you don't ever talk on your podcast really about your story, except anecdotally. I think you'll jump in and throw in a show you were at or whatever, but you haven't really told people your story.
No, it's interesting. We kind of little bits here and there, of like the tour stories that come in, or, the random, well, this is how many shows I've been to or that sort of thing. But no, I haven't really done, because my first question to all my people I interview is like, what's your fish story? How'd you get into this? So, and I would say, for me, it really began with the Grateful Dead. Because it was the culture, the whole part of it. And, I only got to see Jerry twice. But I'll never forget, it was at Boston Gardens. My first show was in 94, but I went down to Boston Gardens in 93. And the way that, you come off of the subway, the T, and back then, you'd walk right onto lot. So it was like the elevators opened. And the only way I can say it is that, like, my life began, and it was just, there was drums off to the side, and I'll never forget, it was this couple that walked by, and it was a guy walking in front of a girl, and she was just after him going, "Bad hippie, bad hippie." I was like, what is this? I'm 18 years old. Yeah, right. Freshman in college, right out of, just like, what? Like, I didn't even know what a dreadlock was back then. There was like nothing as far as that piece was concerned.
You grew up in the Northeast because you live in Maine now. Have you spent most of your life up there?
I have been in Maine since 01, but I am a tried and true Massachusetts girl.
Okay.
And we're right on the border as well. And I went to school in Salem, Mass, where the witches are there. So yeah. We were, going in for that one. But that was like a big part of it. But, my friend Mary Lodge, who is also, or Smith now, is one of my co-hosts. Her big brother was the one who, we were hanging out and they pushed Fee. And I'll never forget it. It came on. And, once again, it's like, not to be all like dramatic about it, but it was like my life changed. It was like, I was like, I want to be part of this. This is, I felt like I was getting in on something from the bottom up, which in retrospect, I realize, I heard it in 93, but we were at that point, and walking into the Grateful Dead lot, it was already established, So I always, I was looking, it was the elders, looking up to the elders and watching what they were doing and seeing all that. But we were creating the fish community and the culture as it, as we grew into it, So Fee was my first one. And then I remember that part there. And then just my first show was July 9th of 94 at Great Woods.
Wow.
And so it was the second of the shows, because it was the night before was the very last Game Henge ever played.
Right. Yeah. This was the next night, right?
Yes. and it's funny because that, for a long time I was like, oh, I missed out on that. I can't believe that. And this was one story that I did mention in my podcast at one point in time, but I'll never forget. It was Worcester. It was those early, 12 that they played the June shows. They opened up summer tour a few years back.
Yeah.
Great shows. But it was,
the indoor shows at the beginning of summer tour.
Yes. Which, please come back to Worcester, guys. Come on. Anyway, but I was, communicating with this guy who was a mute. And so he was talking to me through his pad of paper, and we were talking about the subject. And he was like, you know what, though? He's like, it's probably good that you didn't. He's like, because, it would be like you would have nothing to chase.
Right.
That's part of it. But also, I don't think I would have known what the hell was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that first experience to me would have been almost like I was an outsider.
It's crazy to think about, because that's like those two shows at Great Woods. The 7-8 was Game Henge with all that stuff, and then You Enjoy Myself and really good show, and then 7-9 was just like the exact opposite in terms of being like a good solid, but like very. For middle of 94,
hits.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So which is maybe better.
Yeah, exactly. I hadn't ever heard of, hadn't heard Susie Greenberg before, but they played it that night. And I remember just being like, what? Mm-hmm. This is so exciting. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And like, but then once again, it brings me back to being outside in the lot. Mm-hmm. You know, we were walking around and I'll never forget, because I still actually, I hold on to everything. So I still have one of these little plastic beads, and somebody's necklace or something must have broken. And they were all over this one part of it. And we were like walking around, picking them up. And then all of a sudden, it was almost like we bumped into like head to head with another like two or three people that were also on the journey for these little plastic beads. And they're like, yeah, they're like, have you seen the little balls? I'm like, we're like, yeah, we have two, man. You know, like this, like you know, oh, moment to different lie. But again, it's just that like being part of something that was, you know, you felt important, you know, mm-hmm. like it felt along those lines. So that's how I really got into fish.
So that's summer 94. And then you go through, I know you saw some fall 94, New Year's, then into 95, obviously. What were some of the highlights of early fish or that you saw, or when you really were like, holy shit, this is amazing.
This is big. Yeah, exactly. Again, I was with Mary. It was Providence 94, and we were with another good friend of ours who also was like on my beginning, our friend Chris, and we had like a really weird situation happen out in the parking lot with this girl that we were with, and she ended up like taking off. She kind of bugged out and left, and we were like, what? Like, we don't like even know where she went. Yeah. I haven't seen her since. Like, I don't even know where she went. Like, I heard a few years later she was fine, but still. Like,
oh, man.
So it's just this like weird, just like, ah. And then we go in, and I mean, that David Bowie, you know? It's like the
I have to take a drink when you mention that, because I've mentioned the Providence Bowie so many times on this podcast that I have friends who like facetiously say, you know, drink when you mention Providence Bowie. So I literally just had to take a drink of my beer. So please go, because I'm incredibly jealous that you got to be there, because that's one of my favorites of all time. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, and it's like, you know, it's funny. I was talking to my husband about it the other day. I was like, I don't know how I remember so much more of 3.0 versus 1.0, but I mean, that's a silly statement to say, but I feel like, you know, you're in the moment of it all and this and that, but that night was just so significant. And that David Bowie from the get-go was, you know, imprinted in me. Mm-hmm. And once again, you know, I was becoming part of fish history without realizing it. So, you know, and so it doesn't surprise me that that's come up so many times on your show. Like when you and I had first originally connected about, you know, me being on this, I started to, you know, think about the different things, and I'm like, there's no way they haven't talked about.
Yeah. This. We have like, it's kind of funny. We've had like one episode just about the show, and then in probably a third of the episode, somehow it comes up, just because, you know, it's part of, to me, it's probably it's my favorite fish improv moment maybe ever, just because it's so, it feels very organic, but it's also just so intense and meaningful. And I talk about it all the time still, and I still listen to it a lot. And Brad, one of our co-hosts, he got me the Mike Hammed like jam chart of the Providence Bowie for I think for my birthday a couple of years ago, and now it's hanging in our entryway of our house. So like,
oh, what is that? What is that? I don't know what you're talking
about.
Like, what is that?
You know, Mike Hammed, he does the jam chart. So he started with the Tahoe Tweezer in 2013, and he basically like charts out fish jams. He was doing it live, like as they were play, like with which.
When you say chart out, what do you mean by chart out?
So it's like a visualization of how the music evolves. So it's like the piano's doing this, and this is the key they're in, and then it switches to this. I'll send you a picture, and I'll post a picture of the Providence Bowie jam chart for our listeners. But I'll send you a picture after we talk, because it's people come in to our house who've never been here and are like, "What is this thing?" And then I have to explain the whole thing. So anyway, very meaningful to me too. But that's really cool. So did you see like pretty consistent? Like, were you hooked, you know, after end of 94 onward? Like, were you seeing shows consistently?
absolutely. Because, you know, right, I mean, shortly, I mean, that Providence show, I think it was the 29th of December. And then they were in Boston for 94. And so, and it was just, it was that kind of like weirdo, like I'm in, like, I think I was trying to find myself, you know, and with that, it like, it was like I was in on a secret or something, you know? And so like, we're, you know, we're there for Boston 94. And again, I was just with like two of my friends and, you know, they get in this hot dog and I'm like, what, you know,
that's
this
amazing.
Is just
yeah.
right. You know, like flying over the audience, like, what am I doing? You know? And so that, so, and a lot of those, they were the Amherst shows and whatnot. And then, rolling into, going into 95. So that Providence 94 stuck forever. And then that, December 11th, 1995 in Portland, Maine, was just huge. And, you know, they did that, weird dog log.
Oh, right. Yeah. Where they said they were going to do like an album of all dog logs or something.
Yeah. So, you know, Trey's like, all right, you know, we're going to do an album and it's just going to be dog logs. Mm-hmm. And like, once again, this was a dog, like I hadn't really known, I didn't know dog logs. It wasn't on any of the studios, you know?
Right.
And this is before, you know, I'm not the most organized person. So like having tapes wasn't like, I'd maybe like keep two and then like listen to them until I lose them someplace. And then I'd find another one. Like, but I was never able to really, you know, have that collection that I think a lot of people did. So like, I really got to know Phish through their studio, albums at the beginning, funny enough. So dog log. So he's like, all right, we're, you know, we're going to make this album and it's just going to be dog log. And he's like, okay, so we're going to start playing. And then all of a sudden you guys just start screaming at the top of your lungs.
Yeah.
And so he does that. And then like, then he goes and there, and then that was it. And then they went into whatever song they went into. I can't remember what the song they into. And then the next time they're like, okay guys, here's another one for a dog log. And he's like, next time, this time we're going to play it differently. And we want you guys to just start booing. Like, all right. And then it was also something about like Elvis. It was the last time Elvis played there. That was his last venue. Fishman came out and was in a, you know, an Elvis costume. And I remember the Mango song being really intense. And then there was the naked tripping guy.
It's sweet. Like
running around the audience. And he just was in front of us. He was like, I mean, he was like gone. Like he was like, where are we? Who are these guys? Who are you? What are you doing?
Wow.
And yeah, like, whoa. And so it was just this like impression of like, I'm in this weird freaking scene, you know?
Like,
as far as that's concerned. So, yeah. And then, you know, we did the full 96 and the full 97 summer tour as well. So,
nice.
And that, you know, the 96 summer tour was really short. But it was how I first saw the country. So I feel like, you know, I hopped in, I had my, you know, the patchwork clothes and, you know, started to, you know, no one's shaving their armpits. We had, you know, everybody's, you know, eating burritos, whatever it is. And we drove straight across because it started in Park City, Utah, and went through, saw the Grand Canyon, and then started in Park City. And then that's when we went right into that's the big Morrison riots was that. You know, I tell my parents, okay, I'm running off to follow Phish. It was the summer I was turning 21. I turned 21 on that tour because my birthday's in August.
Okay.
And so, you know, no cell phones back then, obviously, you know,
right,
my parents,
right.
The hell is this band? Where are you going? Like it was back in the day when you would like call your, you know, call the parent, your parents, like collect call.
A payphone or something.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd have like you know, maybe 7 seconds to say what your name is, but you'd just say like, hey, I'm fine. Everything's good. Talk to you soon. Click.
Right.
So they would hear that, you know? But once again, it was about that community and it just everybody taking care of each other. Like if you didn't have something, then your neighbor did. And being part of that was just huge. You know, it became who I was and it was my identity and all my friends were part of it, you know? So,
yeah.
Go on and on about that. I don't like. Yeah.
Well, we're gonna have you back on, and we should break down like a put the Portland 95 show or a summer 96 show, because the fact that you were on tour then is awesome, and I have a lot of questions. But I actually, it's interesting because I saw my first show in 95, and I didn't get to go, quote unquote, on tour until 97. But were you like, were you camping and that whole thing? Were you like, it sounds like you were in it.
When
you were out on tour, or did you like go to a few shows and then stay with friends, or were you like all in and they like you woke up in the morning and started making grilled cheeses with people or whatever?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. So yeah,
good guess.
Right. It was like, it was funny. It was like always like the first rest stop afterwards that just like we'd get to. And it was like, you know, a couple people and we wake up in the morning and it was just lot on at the next rest stop. That's just how it was. So then summer 96, there was four of us in a friend's car. And it was now my ex, who we're still good friends. But we did that. And so the Red Rocks, in particular, is actually how kind of what got me connected with Tom and sort of my story anyway, mm-hmm. With the Under the Scales part of it, which we can talk about afterwards. But that was, you know, we didn't have tickets to Red Rocks. Mm-hmm. So the big problem was, is that, you know, we were pulling in and just like any other lot, you'd pull in, you'd set up camp, that's where you were, but they were not letting anybody in without tickets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we had no place to go, you know, so we like pull out and
you were the people in the newspaper the next day about these hippies roaming the streets of Morrison.
100%. But what we managed to do is that, so we, instead of taking, like, I remember, instead of taking a right to go into Morrison, I believe this is what it was, we took a left and we realized there was people pulling into this, it was a point of geological interest. And we pulled in and we got like the last spot. Mm-hmm. That you could possibly stay at, and because it was like a hiking spot, you could park there infinitely, and the cops couldn't do anything about it. So we moved in for, you know, 4 days or whatever it was, and so we managed to stay out of the mess in Morrison. And again, this is before, you know, cell phones and all that. So, but you're getting word of mouth of what's happening, and but it was only. We thought it was just like over that hill down this path and we could sneak in, you know, it's a lot.
Right.
And it turned out, so we, you know, we start hiking and there's like five or six of us, maybe a little bit more, but, and we get down one area and there's a whole other hill and we're like, oh no, like, okay. So we keep going. And maybe, I think it was like 2 hours later, we're like, the sun's going down and now there's not even a path anymore, but we're like, you know, you could kind of hear the rumble of the music and we're like, shit, like we got to get out of this, you know? And at one point we were literally scaling the Red Rocks and like tears coming down our eyes, like hilariously laughing, just hysterically laughing, because we're on these giant slabs of Red Rocks, like, wow, trying to get to this show. And I look at it, you know, the overview of Red Rocks now, and I'm like, oh, that's where we were, because I'm like, I didn't
that's
know.
Crazy.
Right? Yeah. And finally, and I kid you not, we crest over after scaling these Red Rocks, and finally the music that came through was, you'll never get out of this maze, you'll never get out of this maze. Mm-hmm. And we're just like, holy shit.
they know what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That was
toward
the end of the first set of the first night.
Yes.
And you guys saw the rest of the, so did you see all the other shows too or no?
So what it was, so we pop in a lot and, you know, we tell these people, you know, that we bump into wherever, and they're like, dude, you could have gone on that path like right there. We're like, oh Jesus. We didn't realize. Yeah. So because there's a spot behind Red Rocks that, or at least back then, that you could just hike up, and there's that hill behind Red Rocks. And I still have yet, and if anybody's listening, I honestly, and if you don't mind, I'm just gonna say femalecentrics with a ph at gmail.com, because I am dying to find anybody else that wasn't in my immediate group. There was about 100 of us up there.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, all the nights experiencing it, where we could see the lights, but we couldn't see the show. But I had bet we had better sound there than we did inside at Park City, Utah. Park City's sound sucked. I remember like cupping our ears to try to hear. It was just, I don't know what it was or whatever.
Yeah,
but
it just didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I've yet to find anybody that was up there, but I know that we're, because we almost had, like, it was really, one of the nights, it was just, I know we're going into details about this. I'm going to say this one last piece because this is just amazing. So it was the night that they played A Day in the Life by the Beatles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we were up there and we were watching, because you could see Denver to the left and the whole mountain range to the right. And we were watching. It was a storm. It was a thunder and lightning storm, you know, coming up on us, you know. Did we move? Of course not. We're just like, woo, you know, watching the storm come up. Right. And, you know, it's coming on as it's coming up. And they're playing A Day in the Life. And they, you know, we're coming to that part where it climaxes, where it's mm-hmm. like, and it breaks off and woke up and out of bed. Mm-hmm. And I do not, a bolt of lightning hit the mountain right behind us, like right where we were. And just like, boom. And we're all just like, ah, like all of us like hopped up. And it just settled down into like, woke up, got out of bed. And whoa. All of us were just like, whoa. And then they went into Purple Rain. We were uh-huh. like, that's it. Fish is God. Like,
that is awesome. What was the highlight of the Red Rocks run for you musically? Is there anything that you go back to now or that you particularly remember?
Well, that was the first Harry Hood chant. So... whoever it was, which I remember it was on Under the Scales, Tom was talking to, and forgive me because I can't remember the guy's name. It was a double episode. It was really, really interesting. But he was talking about how he was listening to, who was it at the time? Anyway, he was listening to somebody at the time and he was thinking about like how chants go. And he decided to pass out these papers to everybody to say, hey, when Harry Hood is played, you know, everybody yell Hood afterwards. And you know, and God, if I had only known, I would have held on to that paper because I hold on to everything. But for some reason, I did not on that one.
Well, no, yeah.
And so, yeah, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I think it was Benji Eisen is the person you're talking to, right? Talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
And
yes.
That was a whole kind of fishnet thing with the handing out of the papers and all that. And that's pretty cool that they did that, because now that's a pretty big part of Fish.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, and I was never inside any other shows. I was just on that hill outside, but I was able to be part of all of that, except for the second or third night. It was the night after the big riot, and we decided not to go back in there because of it, because it was just a mess. Like, we heard kids were, a girl got, I think, hit by a car, and there was like beer bottles and people were getting arrested, and we were like, you know what, we ended up going to have lunch at Buffalo Bill's grave, wherever that was. So I think it was this, I don't remember what night it was, but it was one of the nights that we decided to stay out of the mess, because we were just like, I don't know, I don't want to be part of that, I don't know what was going on. It was really crazy as far as, you know, the hubbub and whatnot. But in retrospect,
pretty insane,
I think it was
the whole thing.
What? Yeah, it really was. It really was. So, you know, again, to be part of this like craziness in retrospect, it was like, you know, it was part of, you know, the history that was building Fish, and because they didn't let us back there for whenever they let us back, whenever Fish was able to go back, they banned Fish forever.
Right. Yeah. I think, so that was 96, right? And I think they played there, next in, 2009. Yes. Summer 2009. So, so we're going to jump forward, because I know that, you know, 96, 97, I know you kept seeing Fish throughout that whole period and throughout the years that they played and 3.0.
Yeah,
and we're going to talk more about this, because we need to get in depth onto music, but I do want to jump, if you don't mind, to the podcast, because I'm just curious. I mean, I know you and I and Tom and others have had a lot of email back and forths about you starting this. And, as with every podcast that reaches out to us, at first you're like, okay, so someone wants to do a podcast. That's cool. I've had like hundreds of people tell me they're going to do a podcast. And then the number of people who actually press record and say something is like, mm-hmm. you know, 1% of those people. So what kind of compelled you to do this and to start the podcast?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, this all comes down to Tom and Tom Marshall. And I know I'm assuming huge part of an influence on your life as well, with, you know, starting Osiris and obviously, you know, you've got your podcast and whatnot. So when he started Under the Scales, I heard about it and I started listening right away and just, you know, intrigued by everything that was being said. And it was in that November that he first started. And he said, okay, guys, if you have ideas for shows, let me know. So I shoot him an email and I said, hey, I've got tour stories for days. Like, you know, if you're interested, just let me know. And didn't really hear much. And, you know, I didn't hear much of anything. And it was in April where I look at my email and all of a sudden Tom Marshall is emailing me, you know, like, woo, you know, like, okay, hey, Don, I'm all ears. I'm like, oh my goodness. So it took me a few minutes because I really needed to sit down and like, what am I going to tell him? Like, what are they, you know?
right.
What am I going to feature
really
to him? You
really called your bluff on that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I'm like, oh shit. It's one thing to like sit here and talk fish, you know, but another thing to like actually write it. And like, you know, I'm a pretty good writer when it comes down to it. I just have to have the time. I've got three kids and, you know, full-time job and, you know, stuff that isn't fish, whatever, but you know,
yeah, yeah, you know? We all do. Yeah. I just want to interrupt quickly to say that one of the early things that you and I bonded over was having a daughter named Cassidy.
Oh, that's right.
Which is really cool. Yeah. And I just wanted to throw that out there. So anyway, okay. Keep going.
How old is your Cassidy?
18 months next week.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So right on par. Yeah. Cassidy might just turn two. So, and then I've got my others, Adelaide and Daphne are teenagers. So
all three of ours are under five and none of them have been to a fish show yet. So I'm at the very beginning relatively, but
built-in babysitters. I did this third one right.
Right on.
So anyway, so, you know, so finally I get everybody out of the house and it's a Saturday and so I'm focused and I spent probably 4 hours and I wrote out my summer of 96 fish tour story and all the details of what happened to me at Red Rocks and yada yada. And then I wrote about our New Year's miracle that we just happened to have recently on the New Year's 16 and I won't go into details because I don't want to get off it, but like our tickets got screwed up I went through StubHub and I won't anymore, but I did because I was weak. Anyway, my tickets
custy,
got messed
that's
up.
That's custy move.
I know, so custy, but like it was one of those things like, shit, we have the money, let's just do it, whatever. but they got screwed up and so when they went to scan our barcode, they were like, oh, your tickets they're not right. And we went over to the window and the guy ended up giving us a family section, like front row, well, to the side anyway. And so we rang in the New Year's with Fishman's, like literally I was knee to knee with Briar and Fishman's kids. And yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable. So I shared those two stories with him. So he wrote me back but while I was doing it, I was like, you know what? Like I'm about like a drop in what is, you know, all of Fish's fans' tour stories. And, you know, I was like, it motivated me to try to start to put a book together. And so when I sent all of this to Tom, he loved the Red Rock stories, and especially that I was going to potentially put a book together. Mm-hmm, I was like, all right, let's do this. And so I started to put this project together and I started calling it Things Are True That I Forget. I asked him if it was okay. Mm-hmm. Baker's Dozen. You remember like passing notes back in the day where you'd fold them up into like little triangles? So I printed out like 100 or so notes and I folded them all up and I handed them all out at Baker's Dozen. And I slammed all the Facebook groups and I was like, tell me your tour stories. I'm like, and if you want to stay anonymous, great. You know, that's fine. You just tell me what you want to do, whatever. So I ended up getting about 50 something stories, great stories. I got a friend of mine who was going to be doing it was going to be an audio book and, an ebook, sorry. I was getting all of them in, but then, and so I was going to be on Under the Scales. But it wasn't, I wasn't putting it together the way I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Project wasn't coming together the way I wanted it to. And I felt like I needed a lot more time. And so for me to go on Under the Scales with an unfinished product didn't feel right to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was coincidentally at the same time that Bethany Barker had really started Fish Chicks, and that was blowing up. And then Sophia Callisto, who I also, you know, that her whole project of the music empowering women, which we'll, you know, we can talk about. So both of these women were doing these amazing projects and being part, and the female fish scene, I feel like, is just starting to flourish in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I got in touch with Tom and I said, hey, you know, what are your thoughts on when I go on to Under the Scales that I have Bethany and Sophia be part of this as well, and we talk about what's going on in the female fish, you know, fan base. And he got back to me. He's like, well, I think that you should start the first female centric fish podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. So Osiris and this and that. So this, you know, it was almost immediate. And, you know, my husband, Jason does a podcast called Whiz Kids, and he does that with a couple of his friends where mm-hmm. they just shoot the shit out life and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
he'd been doing it for a while, and I'm like, oh, it's easy, you know, like not easy, but like, you know, I talk about fish all the time anyway. So he's like, yeah, go for it. Like, why not? So I write back, oh, sure. And then that's when you guys both hopped on it. And I'm like, okay, wow, I'm really doing this, you know, like, And you know, my husband's podcast, they use, you know, their iPhones, and they've got a couple, you know, some good microphones and whatnot. But I wouldn't be doing any of this if I didn't have my producer, Ryan. So Ryan loves podcasts, and he's got an amazing recording studio, and I connected with him about it. And he's like super into technology, and he knows all of this, like the back of his hand. So he's like, yeah, let's do this. And so then connecting with you about it, you were mentioning that there was a couple other people,
mm-hmm.
women who were like, all right, you know, wanting to get into it too. And I'm so competitive. So it was like, as soon as, like, you know, Tom was like, you know, oh, you start the first female fish podcast, I was like, I'm in a race. Like, I got to do
mm-hmm,
this shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you did a good job.
Yeah. So I was quick to hop on it, and I knew Bethany, I wanted to get Bethany on there, and, you know, I knew my co-host. So here we are on that one.
So did you, it sounds like the way you're explaining it is more like a, seeing the potential of this conversation to evolve, and not like these dudes are really annoying because they just like are dudes talking about fish all the time. It sounds like it came more from a place of like, this is like, this female perspective is growing, not wanting to like, I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit of both.
No. So I never really thought of it until you and Tom brought it up in that way, that there hasn't been a big female voice mm-hmm, to this
mm-hmm.
and in the podcast world anyway, you know, and
but I
started
think in general about, too, yeah. like not just podcasts, right? Like just
we
in
have
the,
like, quote unquote sausage fest, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Like online, I mean, blogs, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, like it's mostly dudes. And like just the brief stories that I've heard from you on this and other times we've talked, like, You're as legit a fan as I am, if not more. So I think this is like, it's important to bring perspectives to the table that aren't just like the typical perspectives. But anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
No. But I hear you. I hear you on that one. And I think that, you know, I've got an interview tomorrow actually with a woman named Denise Goldman and Stephanie Jenkins, who are bringing the Academia
mm-hmm.
part.
Yeah.
So I'm reading Denise's presentation that she just did recently. And you know, she was talking about just how, you know, bringing the emotional, of course, cause we're women, you know, piece into it, where it's not so much about the technical aspects of each concert or song or whatever, which what I was saying to you earlier, like when I was like, you know, inviting myself onto your podcast, like, I want to come break apart, you know, fish with you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But like, you know, so talking about like, just like the, and then I think that that's what it is. It's just that it's bringing the, a lot of the, you know, touchy feely kind of lady aspect to it, you know, and looking at it that way. So I guess to answer your question, I wasn't coming at it in any way in particular as far as that, you know, the girls versus the guys. It's just more so like, you guys were right. There wasn't. And I'll talk fish for days, you know, like I can, like you were saying, like, right. You know,
like, well, I think
my poor sister's work. I think that's all she hears about.
Well, yeah. Like, everyone has, everyone has someone in their life like that, right? It's like, that's like, wow, this person's really weird. But what's really interesting to me is that, like, I think you're right about the dynamics, but it's also like very gender traditional to be like, well, the women are going to like talk about the emotional things and the dudes are going to like break down set lists or whatever, which is generally true. But I find with this podcast, at least, the most interesting conversations we have are when we like, fish is representative of something else, you know, and you, I think maybe women are better at getting to that more quickly than men, who like, it takes 45 minutes of conversation to figure out that like fish is the way that this person actually learned how to like, you know, live the life they wanted to live. You know what I mean? Like,
sure, yeah,
I think, but I think like women might be better at just like, in the first 5 minutes, it's like, yeah, well, like fish changed my whole life. And now I understand like, X, Y, and Z. I don't know. It's interesting. But I feel like that's what, when we do things right with this podcast, we're actually at the same point that you're going for. It just takes sometimes longer to get there.
Yeah. Well, and you know, my thing was, is that I really wanted, what I wanted to do was, I guess, is give the voice, you know, come from the woman perspective, but give the fish fans a voice, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what I've been finding through all this, is that we're doing some amazing things and everybody wants to be heard and everybody wants to be part of something. So to, put this out there, and especially with having, you know, Tom, who is this, you know, they say Crota is. So if you've got Crota and you've got Tom, it's the fifth, sixth, and, you know, right. And then, and the dude of life as well, you know, it's like, you got this fifth, sixth, seventh, and you might as well throw, you know, Pollock in there too, you know, as far as that part is concerned, mm-hmm. like these, you know, instrumental people. But like, Tom has almost become like, the voice of the fan as well. Like he's so supportive and real when it comes down to it. And it was, I'm starting to not be so fangirl. Like, I'm getting used to connecting with him, but it's still just right. But it's just still like, I think my husband said, like, you know, I just would screenshot, like, you know, when, if him and I text back and forth, Tom, and I would just say like, you know, text from Tom, I'd be like, oh, look, you know, we like short messages, right? So it's getting, easier to be part of that, you know, but it's just, I don't know. This is definitely a great, I'm meeting some amazing people, and there's a lot of people that are doing really important things, involving the community, and just to be able to share my joy and the love of this with the fan and everybody, and talking to everybody. And then for me, the music, you know, bringing the music part into it is our game show, Market Price, you know, which was created because my husband, Jason, who's 10 years younger than me, you know, I brought him to his first show, and this is another one, like, you could break apart. I don't know if you've listened. October 26th of 2010, outrageous first show to go to, you know? And like, and so, you know, he came in one morning and he's like, I'm listening to it. He's like, oh, I love Old Fish. And I was like my heart beamed with pride, you know, I'm like, what? Yeah. I don't know, you know? And then, so he starts playing. I suck at it. I'm terrible at it. And he's so good. And so the first episode, you know, we played the Old Fish, New Fish, which, you know, was the, you know, either pretty much before hiatus or after hiatus, you know? And then that's when it evolved into the Market Price that is now, which is the play on Price is Right, where you have to guess the date, and whoever guesses without going over, and I keep saying like wins jewels, you know, whatever.
Right. Right. Well, so you're doing a great job, and I think it's really entertaining, and I'm sure you're, like you said, you're learning a lot and meeting a lot of people. What's like the biggest thing that you've learned so far since you started a podcast?
I learned that I believe that there's just, you know, the fan base of what we're doing is, there's so many of us doing so many good things. That's what I was just talking about. It's like Bethany starting Fish Chicks and Sophia's Music Empowering Women project and Kelly Morris. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Her Be More Now project. Like,
yeah. She, so cool.
Just connecting with her. Yeah. Just connecting with her. I run a preschool. It's beautiful. It's a forest preschool. It's called Eyes of the World Discovery Center. And that's what I do. You know, I'm the director of it and I teach pre-K and we're out in the woods, all the time, every day. And, but there's a lot of being the director part of it. There's also like, you know, the admin side of it that can get tricky, you know? Mm-hmm. Kelly just brought this light to me that I was like, you know what? Like, I don't have to get so bogged down by the everyday, I don't know. I guess I could just go back to that administrative part to life in general, not just my job, but like that, like boring or just like, you know, people's drama or whatever it is. And so meeting Kelly just lifted this, and I didn't even physically meet her, but like, you know, connecting with her, she's just, it popped in my life. You know, it just, I don't know. She's done a lot for me as far as that. And then Hannah with Cash or Trade has been great. And then, I just, so this week we're going to release, I ended up, interviewing Mark Filaramo, who he was the one who wrote the, elementary school Fish musical.
Oh, Contact. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, seeing, and so he's actually our first guy that we're going to be interviewing. And that's one of the things I do want to say is that, like, just because, you know, so far I have only interviewed women, but this is about a women's perspective. It's not just about what women are doing in the fan base, you know?
Yeah.
So, we've got a big one coming up is Carl Gerhard, who's the trumpet player for, Giant Country Horns, and he's playing with Jazz's Fish now. So we're interviewing him in a week and a half, and he's actually coming to stay. He's going to stay at Christy's house, my co-host, because he's happens to be playing nice. In the town next door. Yeah, yeah. So I think it's just once again, you know, from podcasting is it's oh, and as I say, I'm working on not saying ums.
Me too.
You know, yeah, right? It's so hard sometimes. Like jeepers, but. I think it's just, you know, trying to stay, I don't know. I, it's important, I guess. Does that mean, you know, and I guess this comes back around to my whole journey the whole time is being part of something that's important. And here I am as far as, you know, I was 1.0, 94. I was at the first hot dog. I was at the first Harry Hood, yada, yada. And now I'm doing the first female podcast. Like, yay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think it's, you know, you're doing a great job and it's really cool and it's a fit for sure. And I think, you know, people should check out your podcast, obviously. I know that you just did this trip to the White Sands. Maybe that's a good way, last question to kind of ask before. I think we should maybe go out with some of the first set from that Portland 95 show, like the Dog Log Tube, Dog
They're
Log.
Fun.
You know, so we can figure that out. But tell us about the White Sands trip real quick.
Sure. So Sophia's Callisto's, her project is about, she was walking out of 2005, no, just this past year's Dicks. And she was just like, look at all these women, like some hot women. Like we go out there and we're like dressed to the nines. We got our freaking sequins. We got our sparkles. Like, you know, like we're in it to win it. She was like, oh, this should be like a pinup, like a calendar kind of thing. And then she started really thinking about it. And she's this amazing artist, photography and makeup artist and costume designer and whatnot, and decided to create this book. And so she sent out questionnaires, about I think 140 of us involved right now, and we you know, filled out this questionnaire about, you know, why do you, pretty much like, why do you love fish, like what is your thing, what's your favorite song, whatever it was. And then through our answers, she has created she matched us with either themes or songs. So my theme is free. My daughter Cassidy, I had her at home in my dining room, mm-hmm. and my co-host, one of my co-hosts, Baker, Nicole Baker, she created the soundtrack for my birth, and she was there, and she cued exactly what I wanted. It was the Mountain View 2015 free that I wasn't there for it. I was actually dancing here alone by myself, but it blew my mind, mm-hmm, my feet mm-hmm. free. And so she queued it up and Cassidy was born to free or whatever. So anyway, so I'm matched with free, and, but there's everything from like the Coventry poster is one of her themes to Mike's blue lipstick to, you know, mm-hmm. her take on sloth, like that. She, yeah. Like, and what she's putting together when she sends out these profiles, I guess you could say, is what the makeup's going to be like, what the hair, what the background is going to be. And we're spread out all over the country, you know? So, like Bethany Barker is going to be Susie Greenberg, you know? So there's like, mm-hmm. you know, all these mm-hmm. like different. And so, but she wanted to kickstart it with the group photo shoot in White Sands Dunes, New Mexico, which is just unreal for the song Sand. And her, when she first sent me the portfolio or profile for it, it was like, we were going to be dressed up like mummies, kind mm-hmm, of. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is this? Like, this is kind of, but when she explained it, like, she's really doing the take on the, you can't heal a gunshot wound with gauze. Mm-hmm, so the mm-hmm. gauze aspect of it all. And then the religious part to it. So, and how mummies are alive even though they're dead, kind of thing. And I'd never thought about sand in that manner, you mm-hmm, know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so and it was all expenses paid. We just had to get our airfare and I was like, yes, I'm gonna do this. Yes. Like, you know, school teacher in Maine, but like screw it. Let's go to, you know, yeah. like run off for the weekend, you know? And we did, and there was 13 of us that came together, and I think Sophia might have, you know, I think Sophia knew a couple of, definitely knew Jess, who was our makeup artist, and Michelle, I believe. And, but the rest of it didn't know each other, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I got picked up right off the bat by Melissa, and we, you know, started, you know, we sat and we waited for the rest of the girls, and like Gina showed up, and it was right away. She was like, "Fish chicks," like right away, you know, like knew mm-hmm, us and like. Mm-hmm. And it was by that night that we were like, we're White Sands tribe now. Like, this is our thing. And awesome. So the next day, yeah, like the next day at the Airbnb, she just spread out all the outfits she picked out and the jewelry. And we all just gravitated to exactly what was meant for us and in whatever way. And then the makeup came on and we just turned into like our like inner goddesses came out. And it was like, you know, like it was... And none of us had modeled before. And so we're there. She wanted it to be like, you know, a lot of it was like real serious and like, you know, give me your fierce, like, you know, and like we did. And it was just, when it says music empowering women, it did empower us. And all of us were in our, you know, I think late 30s to, you know, I don't, maybe like, you know, between like late 30s and 50. So, to bring that out of us where we're, you know, moms or not moms or whatever, but just living a regular life out throughout the life. And then all of a sudden we're these, like the way of them, like, we're like fish supermodels now, yeah. you know?
Really cool.
Like, yeah. Yeah. She like, she's nailing it. She's nailing it. I can't wait to see what else we have going on there. Like I've talked to you, you know, about us, having a live shoot, at Curveball.
Yeah,
she's got some really, really great ideas as far as that all is concerned and how, you know, we can kind of connect with Osiris.
Awesome.
And Osiris Tent and whatnot. Yeah, too, with the same thing with, again, Market Price and the ideas of that whole part of it. But it's just, it was amazing.
Really mm-hmm. cool. And I know how excited you are about the stuff you guys are doing and the stuff you guys will do. So really amazing. And thanks for coming on to chat with us about it, because this has been we do need to spend more time talking about fish. But
yeah, that was an honor. It's an honor to be in. I mean, you're you know, they say like the godfather of a podcast, but like right, like you've been doing this for a long, you're the first one, which again,
we
like
are.
Yay for you, right?
We have a good team, you know, like Brad and I started it 5 years ago this month actually, so maybe we should do like, I guess this is probably it, so this is the 5-year anniversary episode. So
Awesome.
Thanks for being on it, but you know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it takes a village. But so people can obviously find you on you know, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever they get podcasts, Female Centrics, yep. or on OsirisPod.com.
Yep.
You know, if that's your avenue of discovery. So Dawn, I think we should play a little bit of that first set from Portland 95, but I really appreciate you coming on. And what else, is there anything else you want to mention or tell people from HF Pod before we let you go back to your evening?
Yeah, sure. So we're on Twitter, and then we have our Facebook group as well. But yeah, I guess it's just, you know, subscribe and let us know. I would love reviews as far as that part is concerned. I think that's important. And then also too, if you're interested in being interviewed on Female Centrics, please get in touch with us. My email's femalecentrics with a PH @gmail.com. And thank you all. You know, this is my love and my life, and I'm so happy to be part of all this. And you know, obviously, I want to thank Tom so much, and then of course Trey and Mike and Paige and John for creating. Thank you.
It's a good thing to be thankful for. Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you, Dawn, and thanks for joining. And people should check out Female Centrics if they haven't already. So thanks again for coming on, Dawn.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thought of something funny during that last jam era. Let me tell you about something that we're doing you guys can help us out with. Just kind of came up with this idea. If you want to, we're doing this other album here on the side. What we've been doing, we'll let the secret out of the bag. Every day when we do sound check, we do this song Dog Log. You guys know? And every day it's totally different. So what we're going to do at the end of the tour, we're going to put together all these things and put out an album, call it Dog Log. 15 different versions of Dog Log. Suddenly I thought, you guys could help us out on this one. So what we could do is we start playing Dog Log and everybody's totally silent as if we're, you know, like a sound check. And at some point during the middle of it, like I'll give a signal or something, and then everybody just start booing, like, this sucks, you suck, you know, just screaming. And then we'll stop it, and that'll be on the album.
Don't start yet.
Don't start. Like, let us start the song, but you have to be really quiet so that on the album it sounds like we're doing it in sound check. Suddenly all these people come in and just start playing. And then, let me see. After you, all right, scream at us like you just hate us, you know? Total hatred towards the stage. And then I'll give you another signal at some point and you can stop again and then we'll be able to get out of it. So, we'll start the song. You guys have to be quiet.
Thank you very much.
All right, you want to do one more for the album here? Hang on one sec, Fish. This one, we'll start it again. This time, when I give the signal, everybody just do the most obnoxious, high-pitched, piercing scream. And what'll happen is, you guys keep screaming, and we'll just kind of fade out underneath so it leaves just you screaming. And then when I give the next signal, just stop. And that'll be the whole thing. So on the album, it'll be like a 1 minute song, okay? We start playing, you guys are quiet, I give you the signal, and when I give you the signal, it's just the, you know? And then we'll stop, you guys keep going until I give you the next signal, that's all you have to know. We're gonna stop underneath you, leaving you singing, or screaming, and then we'll stop it. Does everybody understand their mission? The scream is really a high contrast with the song itself. It's got to be totally out of place. That was beautiful. That was rock history. Rock history in the making. The next Freebird.
Osiris.
This podcast is In the Loop, the Legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with live experiences and podcasts about artists and topics you love. Get in the loop at osirispod.com.